This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Nope, not Chris Carlin tonight. Anita Marks in for Chris with you until 10 o'clock tonight, and we've got a great show lined up. We're going to touch on everything, but we're going to kick it off. Especially, we've got 30 minutes now before the Yankees and the Red Sox do play. Thank goodness. Apparently, all the rapid testing came back negative today, so this game will be played. As we know, yesterday's game was postponed. Now, that has been rescheduled for a doubleheader on August 17th. But still, a lot to report, a lot to get to. Aaron Boone, as well as Gerrit Cole, spoke to the media. So we're really fortunate. We've got Brian Hoke from MLB.com who's joining us. Just had an opportunity to hear what Aaron Boone and Gerrit Cole had to say as they addressed the media. First things first, before we start talking about tonight's game, and let's look back before we look forward and kind of break down the events of how this all unfolded. As we know, the Yankees, 85% vaccinated, one of the first Major League Baseball teams to have 85% of their roster vaccinated. How did this happen?
Right. Well, Anita, as we're continuing to learn here, having the vaccination doesn't necessarily mean you can't obtain the virus or spread the virus. It just lessens the effects, reduces it, keeps you from being hospitalized or, you know, God forbid, dying from it. So really, to trace this back with the Yankees, you have to go back to Saturday in Houston when Jonathan Loaisiga went on the COVID-19 IL, and he was the first guy that they got a positive test back on. After that, Nestor Cortez Jr., Wandy Peralta, those two went on pregame, or what would have been pregame, yesterday, and then they had three more cases pending, and now those have also been confirmed, and those are Gio Urshela, Aaron Judge, and Kyle Higashioka. So six in total from the Yankee player pool, all on the COVID-19 IL right now.
It's pretty wild. And keep in mind, a few that have now contracted, have been tested positive for COVID-19, participated in the All-Star game in Denver. And I know there was a number of players who also participated in that All-Star game that were concerned. But the last that I've read is that this hasn't been like a major outbreak across Major League Baseball. Yes?
Correct. Yeah, testing is ongoing with that. But, the Red Sox, for example, had five players who were at the All-Star game, and Alex Cora had some concern about that situation. But so far, and this is obviously as it has been since last year, a fluid situation that can change very quickly. But as of right now, there has been no outbreak related to the All-Star game in Denver, where Aaron Judge was, of course. And so that is part of the reason why tonight's game is going to be played here.
Again, Brian Hoke joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. So with that being said, from what I understand, the six confirmed are going to miss the next 10 days. What does that mean? I'm looking at the schedule right now, Brian, and I mean, Boston, obviously, three-game series. From what I understand, the game that was postponed yesterday, that's going to be a doubleheader in August. But so, still, three games against Boston, then two at home against Philly, then you're at Boston for another four, and then you're at Tampa Bay. July, this is going to be difficult, and now you're telling me that the Yankees are going to be without their best player.
It is not going to be easy for them. This is a huge stretch for the New York Yankees. They were looking at this coming out of the break. They were going to have eight head-to-head with Boston, a team that they're chasing. They're also going to play Tampa Bay, as you mentioned. So this is a huge stretch for the Yankees, and they're going to be relying on a lot of guys. Some of them were in the clubhouse today shaking hands and saying hello for the first time with Aaron Boone and Gerrit Cole. So they're going to have a healthy dose of these Scranton Rail Riders here trying to play in some of the most important games of the year for this New York Yankee team.
If you recall, though, just a few years ago, you know, the Yankees had a farm system team that was taking the world by storm, and that was supposed to be a quote-unquote rebuilding year. We'll see what happens. Who is in the lineup tonight? What are some of the new names and new faces that we're going to see in the bigs?
Yeah, the big name that you're going to be looking at in this lineup is Trey Amburge, who is making his Major League debut in the Yankee outfield. And he's a guy that I know Eric Kratz, who was on the Yankees last year, has been campaigning on social media for this guy to get a shot and to get called up. Hoy Park is on the bench. He's not in the lineup tonight, but he's another one who has been tearing it up down at AAA. And really, the Yankee farm system as a whole has been having a really productive year. I know that hasn't translated to the Major League team, but they've been having an awful lot of success down there. So this is an opportunity, as Aaron Boone said, for some of these guys to come up and show what they're made of and make their mark in the big leagues. But it was only a couple of weeks ago that the Yankees were at Fenway Park, and I remember talking to Brian Cashman on the field and saying, you know, these guys down on the farm at AAA, is this somebody who could come up and help you, a Trey Amberge, a Hoy Park? And his response at the time was that we don't think, that the Yankees don't think that it was an upgrade over what they currently had on the roster. I think that was open for debate, and these kids are going to get a chance to come up and prove that he was wrong.
Interesting. I know that Boone had an opportunity to talk to the media as well as Garrett Cole, and you were a part of that. If you can share with us, what did Boone have to say to you guys today?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is something that nobody wants to be dealing with, and there's a lot of you know, paperwork and heavy lifting that goes on anytime you have an outbreak like this. And he would much prefer just managing the X's and O's of the baseball game here. But you know, the one quote that sticks out to me about it is that this is their reality right now. They've got to make the best of it. You know, nobody is going to feel sorry for this team. And yeah, they have been dealt a really, really tough hand here to try and get up off the mat. They've been spinning their wheels through the entire first half. And as I mentioned, this is a huge stretch for this team to kind of make up some ground here and get back in the American League race and play like the postseason contender they were expected to be. And when you're putting out a lineup that has a very heavy AAA flavor in it, this is going to be tough for them against the Boston Red Sox. So Jordan Montgomery has to go out and give them a strong start tonight. Garrett Cole understands the responsibility that's on his shoulders as he goes to the mound tomorrow night, coming off that fantastic outing in Houston. And they really need a performance kind of like that one, because the bullpen is going to be a little bit short given the amount of guys they're missing. You're going to have some unproven guys there in the back end. So the more innings that guys like Jordan Montgomery and Garrett Cole can give them, I think the better for this Yankee team.
Again, Brian Hoch joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Just out of curiosity, I know that they did some rapid testing today. As we know, in what's been reported from the scientists and the doctors out there, is that you know, there's a 7-10 day window of testing positive. So can we anticipate more rapid testing throughout this series? And do you feel that there is a possibility that any more of these games might be postponed over the weekend?
I certainly hope not. I can tell you that the testing will continue, that they will continue to monitor that and make sure that it really is contained to those six players who are now obviously separate from the player pool and quarantining and awaiting their negative test. They have to test negative twice within at least 24 hours apart to be able to come back and to be asymptomatic. Some of the guys are symptomatic and are experiencing things like, you know, cold related, you know, similar to a cold, or saying they feel run down under the weather. So guys are having some symptoms of it, nothing severe, thankfully. And so you just hope that it sticks to those six guys and we don't begin hearing that more guys are coming down with it, because that would mean it is continuing to spread within that player pool. So you hope that it was just the six guys, you remove them, and we continue to play ball here at Yankee Stadium.
You know, Brian, you mentioned Garrett Cole also spoke to the media, and just out of curiosity, did he talk about, you know, A, his performance was fantastic against his former team, but unfortunately, the way that it came to an end, the possible sweep, they were up by 6 runs in the 9th inning, and then, of course, we know what happened. Did he talk about, unfortunately, going into the All-Star break and in the midway point of the season on that low point, and how these guys could possibly rally coming into the game against Boston tonight?
Yeah, to be honest with you, it didn't come up during our Zoom call with Cole. And I think that for him, that's probably something that was left in the first half. And obviously so much has happened in the last time period. He went to Denver for the All-Star festivities. He was wrapped up with that, with his family there. We saw him on the red carpet and then flying back to the New York area and then going through this entire COVID outbreak in his in the clubhouse. I don't think these guys are still thinking about that game in Houston. I think they're ready to move on and to get back on the field, because this series against the Boston Red Sox is a big one. So I think that, you know, if you're in that Yankee clubhouse and still thinking about a game that happened, it feels like a week ago, then your head's probably not in the right place. So I think that they just need to focus on the Boston Red Sox. That's mission number one tonight.
Brian, last thing for you, and let's look big picture here. I've been talking about this for the last few weeks on my shows, and that is, I feel the importance not just of this Boston, not this series, but of course now, you know, starting July 22nd, they've got four games, of course, in Boston and the Rays. Like, how much emphasis is being placed on this month and the next 2 weeks with what decisions Hal and of course Brian Cashman are going to make as we get closer to the trade deadline? Do you feel that there's so much emphasis where, you know, if the Yankees do not do well the next 2 weeks, that this is a ball club that for the first time, and let's be honest, quite a while, they'll become sellers as opposed to buyers?
It's a massively huge stretch, and it was even before you had six of these guys deleted from the roster and now are going to be playing relatively shorthanded here. So I think that this is the opportunity for this team to show to Brian Cashman and to ownership that, hey, we can get back in this race. We are worthy of spending more money on investing money into this product and making this roster better for a push toward the postseason. And they are definitely going to be up against it here to make that case, given that, you know, Cashman said they are buyers. But if they sink like a rock, then that can be altered. And if you remember back in 2016, they pulled off a sell-off around this time where you had guys like Carlos Beltran coming off the roster, and that's when they traded Aroldis Chapman to the Cubs for Gleyber Torres. And I think that's not out of the question. So what happens in the next 10 days or so will do an awful lot to determine the course they're going to take.
It's really going to be interesting. Brian, so appreciate your time this evening. Enjoy the series. Hopefully everybody stays healthy and at least these three games could get in over the weekend. Thank you so much, my friend.
I hope so. You got it, Anita. Take care. Bye.
All right. I want to thank Brian for joining us. A little preview for you as we're just moments away for the first pitch, the Yankees and the Red Sox, 800-919-3776. You want to get in? I'm curious. I'd like to hear from Yankee fans. How significant, how important, how much emphasis, how much weight, how much pressure are you putting on the remaining 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks of July? And what are your realistic expectations for this Yankees team with a very difficult, competitive schedule for the next few weeks? 800-919-3776. Again, Anita Marks in for Chris Carlin tonight, right here on 98.7 ESPN. You got Stroman on the bump for the Mets as well as they start a three-game series against the Pirates, of course, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, looking to improve their record. I do believe the Mets will be active and attractive and be buyers and go after some guys who potentially could help them in that lineup, because let's be honest, you know, they are first place, as we know, in the National League East, but 19-18 in that division. So evidently, their pitching has been carrying the load here. The batting needs to catch up, if they want to try to not only make it to the postseason, but be active and attractive and pretty aggressive and make some noise in the postseason. 800-919-3776. Let's go to Rob in Wayne. Rob, welcome in. How you doing this evening?
Hey, Anita, nice to hear your voice tonight. Pleasant surprise on a Friday.
Thank you.
As a long-standing Yankee fan, I really want them to see, you know, for the rest of this year to flounder, and I'll tell you why. They've kind of turned it over to the analytics department. The analytics department is looking backwards, and like Mark Twain said, there are lies, damnable lies, and statistics. When you look at the back of a baseball card, you're only looking at the past. If we're going to project that forward, then Mighty Joe Carboneau would be like a Hall of Famer now and be like leading in home run statistics. You can't build a team that way. And that team was built historically with Gehrig and Ruth. Mantle was a switch hitter. You look at all the guys that were on the teams in the 90s, Posada, Bernie was a switch hitter. All the guys were either lefty dominant or they were basically a 5-4 mix. So unless you build the team right, you really can't be competitive. And I just don't see this team as fundamentally sound or as balanced enough in their hitting to be able to be competitive. That's all I got.
No, it's Rob. It's It's solid. And, you know, and thank you for the phone call. Appreciate it. You're right. Especially in regard to the lineup, you know, against powerful right-handed pitchers, especially late in games. Unfortunately, this Yankees team is no bueno. You know, when it comes to analytics, and Sam, I'm going to get to you in just a second. When it comes to analytics, across the board, right, whether it's Major League Baseball, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, I think baseball, obviously, more than any other sport, I'd say football comes in second, especially more and more now. We're hearing a lot more organizations putting a lot more value and a lot more time and making a lot more decisions, especially in the NFL draft, when it comes to analytics. But here's the thing. Analytics cannot measure a man's heart or a woman's heart. Okay. It just cannot, you know, it can measure a lot of things, better than we humans can. That's for sure. But it can't measure an athlete's heart. And let's be honest. You know, and let's take Tom Brady, for example. And I know I'm comparing football to baseball right now, but I'm just talking about an athlete. You know, Tom Brady got drafted in the sixth round. Why? Analytics said he stunk, right? Look at his stats in Michigan. I mean, you know, what was his 40 time? 5.9? If you go back and you look at the video, you look at the photographs, he didn't look athletic at all. But there was something that Bill Belichick, there was something that the Patriots saw in him that really they felt could develop, could change, could grow, could turn into that quarterback that we've seen him turn into now. You know, and I think you could say the same across the board with a lot of athletes, a lot of professional athletes. And so my thing is, I don't have a problem with analytics. My concern is, what is the percentage? What is the grade? What is the percentage of analytics that an organization, that a franchise is taking in and using as their evaluation or making decisions? Because when you remove the human element to a certain, you know, whether it's you remove it 50%, I still think that's a lot. You know, maybe 60-40, human element 60, analytics 40. Maybe you know, each situation is different. But every organization is different. Let's go to Sam in Rockland. Sam, you're up. Welcome in.
Hi, Anita. I think for the Yankees case, I mean, three things could be true. One thing could be true is that they're just a bad baseball team. Second, there's a baseball team that has no tradable options because of the high contracts. And then three, it could be something where this is a 2 to 3 year stretch run where they're just bad, have injuries, put problems because of just aging players in general, and then the prospects didn't turn out the way that they wanted. Those three things could be true. And then regarding, even like, for example, if Gerrit Cole has some of the 2 or 3 good outings, I mean, you think there's a team out there that's going to give even a high-level prospect and take on that $300 million? The Yankees put themselves in this hole. And regarding Cashman, Michael Kay says, oh, well, he's going to have a job if he gets fired. Well, that could be true, too. I mean, he could be a good GM, but he didn't do a good GM job the last two or three years. I mean, a lot of things could be true, and Cashman could get a job and maybe be successful, but that doesn't mean that he did a good job the last 2 or 3 years by giving 7 to 10 year deals.
Yeah, but Sam,
$500 million.
Sam, Michael Kay is absolutely right. I mean, you're talking about a general manager who has 5 rings and has been above 500 in 24 seasons. So, yeah, Michael Kay is absolutely right. If the Yankees organization decide to move on from Brian Cashman, he's going to get a job like within like a New York second. You know, but at the same time, you know, I think you are right. Here's the thing. I think there are a number of reasons that is wrong with this Yankees team and wrong with this roster. Like I said, a right-handed lineup going up against strong right-handed pitchers, especially late in games, no bueno. Not athletic. You look at this team, I don't see a lot of athletes. Arguably one of the worst offenses in Major League Baseball. And another thing is, we haven't seen them really develop players like Torres, like Sanchez. And if you look around Major League Baseball, a lot of the the coaches and the staff that was here when, you know, the core four was here, and this was an organization that was a drafting well and developing players a lot better than they are now. A lot of that staff, a lot of those coaches are no longer with this organization. Some of them followed Derek Jeter to Miami. A number of them are not here. So, you know, I think there's unfortunately a laundry list as to what is wrong with this Yankees team. And I don't see this turning around anytime soon. And I'm sure Yankee fans would be quite upset and disappointed that if at the trade deadline, this is an organization that becomes sellers and dumps some contracts, if they can, Stanton being one of them. I think he's handcuffing this team for in a number of areas. But maybe sometimes, you know, Yankee fans are so used to winning. And I get it. It's World Series or bust every year. And that should be the norm because that's what has been accepted here. But maybe not this year. I'd like to continue to talk Yankees. I know first pitch is happening momentarily, but we will dive into some NBA as well. We've got Game 5 on Saturday. Really excited about it. I was on Daily Wager earlier today with my picks and my plays and my analysis, so we'll dive into that as well. Ramona Shelbourne is going to join us in about 30 minutes from the West Coast to break that down for us as well. So excited to get her on in the first hour. We'll dive into some NFL. We are just weeks away. Can you believe it? Somebody pinch me. I can't believe it. We are weeks away from training camp opening up and players getting ready. Of course, you know, they show up the end of this month, and then August is not OTAs, but training camp and the preseason games. And then, of course, before we know it, September is going to be here, and it's time to rock and roll. So second hour, we'll do a deep dive into my thoughts, some of the top storylines heading into training camp for both the Giants and the Jets. Of course, number of people who listen to me know I'm a fantasy football freak, so I'll share with you some fantasy football analysis. I'll open up the full lines. You've got some fantasy questions getting ready for your draft. I average about 12 leagues a year, so I've already signed up, and I'm ready to go in about seven of them. So halfway there, waiting for the other commissioners to start the other leagues, and I've already started doing somewhat of a deep dive. Until training camps open up and until we really, really get a good feel and a good vibe with the storylines and the players, and, you know, they're still talking to who's going to start in Chicago. Of course, Andy Dalton's going to start in Chicago. Who's going to start in San Francisco? Of course, Jimmy Garoppolo's going to start in San Francisco. Come on. These dudes aren't ready. Who's going to start in New England? Well, I do believe Cam Newton's going to start, but if I had to put money down on what rookie is not going to start, but we'll see him before others take over or play, it's Mac Jones. Because, again, if you listen to me, you know how much I love Mac Jones, and I felt he was the best quarterback coming into this draft outside of Trevor Lawrence. But nonetheless, we'll talk some NFL. And then typically on Friday nights, I follow Chris with a gambling show. It's called Weekend Wager, brought to you by BetMGM, and it's from 10 to midnight. But since I'm filling in for Chris, we're moving that hour up. So from 9 to 10... we'll bring you Weekend Wager. Tyler Fulgham, who is one of my partners in crime on Daily Wager, our gambling show on ESPN2, Monday through Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Shameless plug, not so shameless. And so we'll dive into some NBA plays, some Major League Baseball plays. Again, we just spent the first 30 minutes of the show talking about the Yankees and the Red Sox. That series back in action again, and thank goodness that it is. I'm sure he'll have a play there, as well as the Mets getting ready to take on the Pirates for the next 3 days, as well as golf. We have a major that's taking place across the pond, don't you know? And Louis Oosthuizen. I can never pronounce his name. I try time and time again. That's why I just say Louis O. He's at the top leaderboard. This is a guy, and if you're not into golf, okay, I get it. But here's a really interesting storyline. And if you're as old as I am, and you used to watch the daytime television, then you know who Susan Lucci is. Oosthuizen. He is, Louis O is the Susan Lucci of golf. Six times in his career, he's finished second in majors. Six times. always the bridesmaid, never the bride. And now he goes into Saturday, tomorrow, and they'll tee off probably first tee time, I think, will be around like 4:30 in the morning, because now, of course, they cut the field down heading into Saturday and Sunday. Before, on Thursday and Friday, tee time was at 1:30 in the morning. So needless to say, I'm a little tired. But this, in my opinion, this is the year for him. And it's a huge storyline because, again, can you imagine just marinating that for a minute? Six majors, two this season alone. Six total, two this season alone that he's finished second. So it's a really good feel-good story. Because he's a really good dude, and I'm really rooting for him. Not to mention, I do have some coin on him to win. And so he's 11 under. Behind him is Colin Morikawa at 9 under and Jordan Spieth at 8 under. The history of this tournament, by the way, 12 of the last 15 winners, they went into Saturday. I'm trying to think how to phrase this. 12 of the last 15 winners went into Saturday in the top 10. Heading into Saturday. So just stop right there. Look right there. Look at the guys in the top 10. And really, for me, it's Louis O. I think he gets the deal done here. Can you imagine if he doesn't win and comes in second again, and you're talking about three second place finishes in the same year, let alone seven total in your career? I can't. Nothing but positive thoughts out there for Louis O. So we do have a major happening. Tyler will jump on board and give us some of his picks and his plays. I will give you mine. And David Behrman always joins me on the program with some golf and some NBA as well, getting you ready for a big weekend. Olympics is right around the corner. There is a lot going on. 800-919-3776. This is what we're going to do. We're going to regroup, come back. I want to do a deep dive into the NBA. Let's talk about this series. It's all tied up at 2-2. Okay? Saturday, game five. Again, I just came off of Daily Wager. 80% of the public money is on the Suns. 80%. Are you feeling like this is a game that's home court advantage is the most important thing? Because listen, we saw the Suns. It's been an ebb and flow to this series, right? Suns came out. We weren't sure how Giannis was going to play. He had that buckled knee, the hyperextension. We weren't sure how aggressive, how strong and solid and aggressive he would be in the paint. Boy, did that injury even happen? Like, it was pretty gruesome. It was pretty disgusting. And it's pretty extraordinary what we've seen from him so far. But as I said, it's kind of in this roller coaster ride, this ebb and flow to the series with the Suns starting up 2-0. And then it went back to Milwaukee, and their fan base is just so amazing. I mean, heck, I feed off the energy of that fan base when I'm watching from home. So now the series is all tied up at 2-2. I've got some thoughts. I really do believe that the Bucks have found, I'm calling it the secret sauce. I feel the Bucks have found the secret sauce and how to contest and contend against the Suns. There's also some talk and speculation that Chris Paul is dealing with some type of injury. Now, we know earlier in the postseason, he was dealing with a shoulder, wrist, right? When he went down, he kind of had that little contusion. And then for a few games after that, he wasn't able to pass the ball properly. There's some talk and speculation that maybe he's some type of injury has reared its ugly head again. Who knows? But when we get back, I'm going to do a deep dive into that. We'll open up the phone lines, 800-919-3776. Your thoughts on the series. I'm excited for game five. I was worried when the Suns went up 2-0. Well, first of all, let me rewind. Because of the knee injury that we saw happen with Giannis, when the series began, I was all over this. I said the Suns in six. I thought the Suns they would win the series 4-2. Okay, then they come out and they were just so dominant and so strong. They looked so good the way they were passing the ball. Booker, Chris Paul, Ayton was unbelievable. A man possessed, unstoppable in the paint. I said, oh wow. I need to go back. I'm looking at the series in five. Bucks will be lucky if they win one game. Probably they'll win that with the first game when they go back to Milwaukee. That'll be the one game the Bucks win. So I put money down. The series was going to end in five. Suns were going to win 4-1. I don't know about you. Now I'm dancing to the beat of a totally different drum. Okay. Now I went back on my previous two bets, and now I'm saying that the series is going to go the distance. And I do believe that the Bucks are going to win this series, and I think Giannis is going to end up as the MVP. What say you? Have you been on this roller coaster ride of assessing this series like I have? because it's been insane, and it's turned out to be a pretty damn good one.
Just a hustle play. I thought I'm going to get dunked on, to be honest with you. But you know, going down the stretch, just do whatever you know it takes to win the game. You know, just put yourself in a position that can win the game. And you know, I saw the play coming. I saw that Chris Paul was throwing the lob. So now I'm just going to jump vertical, you know, towards the rim. Hopefully, I can, you know, be there in time. And I was there in time and was able to get a good block and go down and get to a point. So it was a great hustle play.
Giannis talking about that crucial block against Ayton. I'm going to pay a lot more attention on Saturday and just a few things. Is Ayton playing a little bit more? I don't want to use the word soft because he's not soft. Love Ayton. Love what we've seen from him this postseason. But just, you know, out of concern that he can't, like, he fouls out, game over. Done. Right? We'll see. 800-919-3776. We're going to hear from Ramona Shelbourne in just a second. Let's go to our phone lines. We've got Doug in Long Island. Doug, welcome in. Good evening. How you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Great.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It's an interesting series. I know Chris pretty well, and it's just kind of funny because I think they're going to end up putting Drew on him to start. But the thing is, Drew will shift if Devin gets it going. I mean, Devin is unreal, but this is a tale.
Well, he didn't. But here's the thing, Doug. He didn't shift. He didn't shift in Game Four. You know, Booker ended up with 42 points.
He'll be back. You know, Dev is a gamer, man. He's a gamer. I'm a kid. And the thing is, it's going to be interesting, but it's just a tale. It just shifts. I mean, people got overhyped with the Suns won two games, and they're not about to have to win two. Now, if the Suns play well, like they normally do at home, and they win this game, we'll be back on the radio a day after saying, oh, it's almost over. And then when the Bucks win, we'll say, oh, no, the Bucks, you know. But you are so correct about Ayton. If he's not in there, they're in serious.
Serious doo-doo. Doug, let me ask you this. What do you like better? Do you like the 2-2-1-1-1 or do you like the 2-3-2?
I like the 2-3-2 because I think the guys are traveling a lot less and puts a lot of, you know, pressure on guys to play hard. I mean, they're playing hard. All these guys are playing. I mean, Chris wants to lead that young team to a championship. But I like the 2-3-2. I often, you know, we talk to, you know, my brother, he's the president of the Knicks, about that stuff, and he loved that as well. And so many guys I know that play now wish you could go back to that. But I think, you know, this is interesting. I think, you know, and again, I know several guys that are watching and they're cheering for Chris, but they're just loving the fact that it's good basketball.
It is. It is good basketball, isn't it? And Doug, thank you for your phone call. Appreciate it. Thank you for listening. You know, I've said this many times, you know, even though we don't got the big names and the big stars, besides Giannis, of course, and with all due respect to Chris Paul, I've enjoyed this postseason more than I have in postseasons before. You know, like I've fallen in love with guys like Joe Harris with the Nets and Trae Young, of course, with Atlanta and this young man, Cam Johnson, with the Suns. An opportunity to see these young men shine. And I think the NBA is really, the future is very bright and really exciting for the NBA right now. Without further ado, she's been holding on. Ramona Shelbourne joins us. So Ramona, been talking about this. We just had a caller call in as well in regard to the ebb and flow, the roller coaster ride of emotions and feelings and thoughts. An analysis that I've had on this series, loving the Suns, then loving the Bucks. So I guess let me throw this your way. You know, where does this series go from here?
Like I picked Phoenix in this one too, just because I was under the impression that Giannis Antetokounmpo had a knee injury. Like we were all like, oh man, is Giannis gonna play game one? I'm like, I bet he'll try to play, but man, that injury looked rough. That's normally a 2 or 3 week injury, at least. And so, like, when he came out in game one and played well, I think we all had to recalibrate what we thought would happen this series. So that, I've covered Phoenix each of these rounds now, and this was pretty standard for them. You know, they tend to jump out and play really well the first two games at home. In the Clippers series, in the other two series, they've lost a couple games, you know, games 3 and 4 a few times. But I don't want to take anything away from Phoenix, okay? They're a very good team. They're deserving their place here. But, you know, they play teams that have injuries, like up until now. I mean, the Lakers had Anthony Davis go down in the middle of game 3. Denver obviously didn't have Jamal Murray. The Clippers didn't have Kawhi Leonard. So they've had this road where their opponent is down a pretty important piece. So in this series, I thought, well, they're going to get the Bucks without Giannis or a limited Giannis. But, man, he has been really good. And I think you have to kind of give the edge to Phoenix still because they have 2 of the 3 at home. But I would say who's played better in this series so far, I give the edge to the team that's had to make adjustments, right? Milwaukee made adjustments after the first two games. And I think they deserve to be, you know, in this spot right here.
Absolutely. And that's where I was headed, you know, because after the first two games, you know, I had Amin Alhassan on the show and him, like, what's wrong with the Spart? Like, they're not playing smart. They're not playing aggressive. Why aren't they getting anybody into foul trouble? They're not contending. They're not contesting. And so we've just seen, besides, you know, the fact that they're back on their home court and the fan base there is fantastic and they feed off of it and Money Middleton and Holiday. But they have a different strategy. They zigged instead of zagged. And so, you know, I think that's the key here. And I'm throwing this back at you. I mean, Ramona, do you think they have found the special sauce to really contend and contest and win the series against the Suns, even though it's going back to Phoenix?
Well, I mean, look, they felt really good after the first game or two because they felt like, well, we really haven't played that well. Like, a lot of the things that they tend to do well, which is they don't turn the ball over, they rebound pretty well, they don't foul too often, they're pretty good at the turnover game. They felt like they could just clean those things up and they could win games. Like, it wasn't necessarily that they needed a whole new approach or a new formula. It was just they had to do the little things better. And I think it's what you saw, really, in the last two games. They also got a really good game from Chris Middleton yesterday, which – We should talk more about, you know, it's not often you score 40 in a finals game. We, you know, I was doing Around the Horn today and we barely mentioned him in the first segment. I'm like, guys, Chris Middleton at 40. Like, oh, pretty good. But look, they won that game. The couple stats jumped out at me, okay? They had 17 offensive rebounds, which led to 19 second chance points. Pretty good, okay? Fast break points, 15-0 in favor of Milwaukee. You would talk about cleaning up the little things, not letting Phoenix get any fast break points. That's pretty impressive against a team like the Suns who likes to get out and run.
So now again, you know, the series goes back to Phoenix. Booker was sensational last night, 42 points. And even when he got into foul trouble in the second half and, you know, God knows what that final point total would have been if he was not. Chris Paul, somewhat of a shell of himself, 5 for 13, had 5 turnovers. That can't happen. But probably the most glaring to me is Ayton. I mean, like, 6 points. Granted, 17 rebounds, okay. But, like, 6 points? You know, what happened there? And you know, what you feel that we'll get back to the double-double we've seen him produce? It seems like every time he's taken the court in the postseason.
Well, you know, I just think it's Ayton to me can be a limited type of offensive player. He doesn't necessarily create his own offense. He needs people to create for him, which I thought was why the big play last night was the lob and the alley-oop where Giannis blocks it. I really thought Devin was, one, it was a good play. It was a smart play. But Devin had a shot. He could have just gone with the floater over Giannis. He tries to get the ball to Ayton. I think he's trying to get him involved. I mean, that's what they need to do with Ayton. And he's on his way to slam it home, except for Giannis blocked it. But, you know, the other issue is Chris Paul. That was one of the worst pass games I've seen him play. Period. Not just this year. I don't know what's up. Like, I hope he doesn't have an injury or something. I know he had a wrist thing earlier. You know, with 5 turnovers in that game, especially that one at the end. He had more turnovers and field goals field goals made. It's not great. You know, this was a very uncharacteristic Chris Paul performance. And, you know, that happens sometimes. The guys are so close to it. He's so close to getting that title that maybe grip the battle too tight, to borrow a sports metaphor from baseball. But I do not expect Chris to have another game like that. He's too good of a competitor to have back-to-back games like that.
Ramona, two quick questions before I let you go, and please know how much I appreciate your time. Number one is, you know, there's been some talk, especially on Around the Horn, and this is when I was first clued into it, with the ref Scott Foster. From what I understand, Chris Paul is 0-12 when he is a part of the refereeing crew. What gives there? Is there anything into that trend? Is there an issue there between him and Scott Foster? What's that situation?
Well, look, Chris has made a point about it, okay? In the series against the Lakers, when they lost, I think it was game three, he kind of got up from his press conference and made a point of saying he was 0-11 when Scott Foster refereed. He just said, he didn't name him or anything, he just said 0-11. That's a pretty big stat, 0-11. And it's like, he's called attention to it. It's obviously a pretty glaring stat. It's obviously they have some history. But my sense is, look, every team in the league, every player in the league has certain refs that they have a bad record against. And they also have refs that they have a great record with. It kind of tends to even out. Some of it is just maybe the way that referee sees the way you play. Chris, as you have probably figured out, is pretty masterful at drawing fouls. Maybe Foster doesn't give him those calls. Maybe he just doesn't like him. I don't even know, okay? But it is... This is not unique to Chris Paul to have a situation like this with a referee. Every team, every player, they all have certain refs that they just don't do that well when that guy refs their game. It doesn't mean there's a fix in. It doesn't mean that they have anything personal. It just turns out that way. And I think in the finals, Scott Foster, very good ref. Some people have issues with him, but they have issues with all refs. And I just think it's not fair to the referees, who have a very hard job, to single them out in this way. Because I just think you could say the same. If you went through the referee records, you know, for all the different teams, I guarantee you'd find other examples like this.
Last one for you, and this is for the folks here in New York. There's been talk and speculation that when this series and the season is done, that there is a chance that Chris Paul will not return to Phoenix, and there's a possibility he might come to New York, and who knows, maybe become a Knick. What are you hearing? Is there any rumblings that you're hearing? What is the likeliness or you know, what's the percentage chance that you think that could happen?
I would say less than 5%. Right? Like, I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible, but he has such a good fit there in Phoenix. And one of the reasons why he picked Phoenix and why it was important for him to go there was because he was close to his family living in Los Angeles. So, okay, what's closer than Phoenix? I guess the two LA teams, but I don't see how either of them could afford him. It really takes some doing, and he would have to want that. But if you want to leave a team you just went to the finals with, that he might win with, I mean, it's just hard for me to picture. But I think he opts out, and I think he finds a new deal. I don't see it. Not after the way they played this year.
Ramona, thank you so much for spending time with us this evening. So appreciate you, my friend. Enjoy the rest of the series, and have a great weekend.
Cool. Thanks, Anita.
Again, Ramona Shumway joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. You heard it there. She's not giving it any likeliness that Chris Paul will come here. However, I had Amin El-Hassan on my weekend show last weekend, and Amin alluded to this 36 years and over luxury tax amount, yada yada. I don't know the details. I mean, of course, Amin El-Hassan used to be an executive in the NBA. He knows, and he's giving it a much better chance, a much better opportunity than Ramona, that's for sure. But Ramona made an excellent point, and that is, you know, Chris Paul's family, who he's very, very tight with, lives in Los Angeles, and you know that obviously that would be a huge commute, and he would be way, way far away from his family, if that was something that he was would even remotely consider or pursue. By the way, just to give you a Major League Baseball update, Yankee fans, you're not going to want to hear this, but the Boston Red Sox are up on the Yankees 3-0. Montgomery, two innings, three hits, three runs, only one strikeout and gave up a walk, a home run as well. So unfortunately, bottom of the second, Red Sox are already up 3-0 in this series. We opened the show with it. We spent the first 30, 45 minutes of the show talking about the Yankees. I know Simon in New Haven wants to talk about the Yankees. We get back from the break, we'll talk about it. 800-919-3776. A part of me feels like, you know what? The season's a wash. Like, just accept it now. The next 2 weeks, I think, for Yankee fans is going to be really, really, really brutal. You've got 7 games against the Boston Red Sox. You've got 3 games against the Rays. Hopefully, maybe they win 2 games against the Phillies. But I think the next 2.5 weeks are going to be really, really, really brutal. And I'm not normally a negative Nelly. I know I sound like one right now. But I just, as I said when we opened up the show, I just think that there are a lot of things wrong with this this Yankees team. And I don't think it's a quick fix. I don't think, as we get closer to the trade deadline, a player or two is going to turn this situation around. I just don't. I think this is an organization that needs to start focusing on next year. Scratch this. Start building this roster properly. Whether it's the lineup, going after another starting pitcher, just push the reset button now. Don't put Yankee fans through a brutal July. But I want to switch gears this hour. I want to talk some NFL, as we are just let's be honest, 2 weeks away from training camps opening up. And there's so many storylines. First and foremost, before we start, and I want to kind of take a tour around the NFL and kind of share with you like my thoughts in regard to what I'm seeing in each division, and you know, let's take a deeper dive in regard to what's going on, obviously, in the AFC East and the NFC East, with of course the Jets and the Giants. But reports today, this is really interesting. So reports today is that Tom Brady played this past season with a torn MCL. Now, if you recall, I'm not sure if it was last season or the season before that, his wife Giselle came out on an interview and reported, not that she was reporting anything, I don't think she realized what she was doing, but she was saying how Tom Brady had been playing with a concussion. So obviously there is a pattern here. There's a pattern here of Tom Brady playing with injuries that aren't being reported. And I'm not going to sit here and throw Tom Brady under a bus. I'm not. What I am going to do, though, is I'm going to throw the Patriots under the bus. Because, and let me preface by saying, I understand that every team tries to cheat. And some teams might not look at it and go, well, we're not really cheating. We're not saying, we're not doing, whatever. And I've been covering the NFL for a long time, and the information I have and what I know, the Patriots just cheat a little bit more than everybody else. They push the envelope a little bit more than everybody else. So I'm not going to sit here and I'm not going to rip Tom Brady. I'm not going to throw him under a bus. I think this is a Patriots way that followed Tom to Tampa. That's what I think this is. Because Bill Belichick can't stand reporting injuries. Everybody is probable when probably a third of them are doubtful, if not out. But he lists everybody as probable on Thursday. You know, here's what the problem is, okay? Take it from somebody who's now in the business when it comes to sports gambling. And Roger Goodell and the NFL, and they're not embracing gambling like silver and the NBA are, or golf, or other sports are really embracing. Yesterday I played Liberty National, and I want to thank the folks out there. They were so great. And the folks that are running the Northern Trust, it's coming our way in August. It's going to be a great event. Really, really excited for it. Definitely check it out. If you have an opportunity that weekend, you're in town, definitely think you should head out there. It's going to be great. They've got a lot of great things lined up for you. But and I just forgot. I just forgot what I was going to share with you. But let me go back to Tom Brady. And that is, you know, a lot of times you don't reveal everything. You don't reveal all the injuries that you have. But when it comes to gambling, oh, okay, now I know where I was going with this. What's really going to be exciting about the Northern Trust and Liberty when it's in town, that tournament, is that they're going to have a betting kiosk. They're going to have a betting area that you can go and you can sit and watch and bet each hole, each player. This is the way that this is where our industry is headed. Okay, gambling now has surpassed fantasy football. Gambling is now it in our industry. Don't deny it. It is what it is. And for Tom Brady to play the entire season with a torn MCL and not have that not be reported is horrible for the business. So not sure exactly what's going to happen with the Tampa Bay Bucks, but again, I don't, and I'm not ripping Tom Brady. I'm not throwing him. I truly believe that this is residue, him coming over from the Patriots, because, you know, again, this is what the Patriots like to do. But this needs to change. Very similar to the Super Bowl and Patrick Mahomes coming into the Super Bowl with a busted toe that, oh, by the way, needed surgery. Was anyone informed? No. When were we even told, notified of Patrick Mahomes' toe injury? Maybe 3 hours before the game? From Ian Rappaport? How long did he sit on that? How many, I'm really curious, I would love for somebody, how much money was wagered and put down on the Kansas City Chiefs to win the Super Bowl without knowing that Patrick Mahomes had a busted toe that needed surgery? Follow me here? So even though, you know, you might sit back and go, this, Anita, come on, you're making a mountain out of a molehill. This is not it. This isn't important. This is nothing. You're wrong. You're wrong because of the state of where our industry is right now and how important gambling is across the board. And so coaches like Bill Belichick, players like Tom Brady are going to have to change that stance. They're going to have to realize, like, this is more significant than what meets the eye. And one might say, well, Anita, it was strategic. You know, you don't want other teams to know that Tom Brady's playing with a torn MCL. They'll target his knee. Okay, well, then have a better offensive line. Make sure nobody even gets close to his knee. I don't know what the answer is, but we as a sports society and a gambling community cannot be placing bets on teams, especially quarterbacks, when they're not 100%, and that's not being reported to us. So, you know, again, this was news today. A lot of NFL shows talked about it. They mentioned it, but I don't think they did a good enough job really diving into the significance of this. And you know, will the Tampa Bay Bucks be penalized? I'm sure they will. I'm sure they'll have to pay a fine. You know, I don't know. Do they lose a draft pick? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But just food for thought. I just wanted to share this with you. I wanted to throw it out there, marinating this for a minute. This is significant. Because even though you might not gamble, there are a number of people who gamble, and they gamble on teams based on the information that's out there and that's provided, and it should be on the up and up. And once again, Tom Brady and his team were not. And I think it's pretty crappy, to say the least.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.